So before we get right into talking about Samson, I want to go back to the beginning and point something out that I learned from R.C. Sproul about Adam and Eve. And that point being that Adam and Eve were truly unique to all of us. And what I mean by that is they had the ability, the actual ability, to be good and please the Lord. And they also had the ability to sin and do wrong. They had the actual ability to do the right thing. Now, we know what happened. We know they got put out the garden. And what I find interesting is now we only have the ability to do wrong. We only have the ability to sin. We don't have the ability to please the Lord. It's said several times throughout passages. It's not possible. Only way for us to do that is to turn our life over to his son. So I just kind of want you to keep that in the back of your minds as we go through the story of Samson. And of course, it starts out, the actual pages for Samson, just so that we know, is Judges 13, chapter 13 through chapter 16 is the entirety of scripture as far as Samson is concerned. But I'm going to read the very first passage here, and it's one that you'll read a lot through the Old Testament, which is, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years, right? So there it is already. We're in another apostate cycle. You know, they cry out to him because they're being, you know, they're underneath his wrath. They're underneath his judgment. They're dealing with the consequences of their actions. They cry out to him. And of course, he's merciful and he's patient and he delivers them again. And after a while, they just kind of forget about it, and they go back to weird fish gods and everything else like that. And then, boom, they're back in captivity. They're dealing with this. They're dealing with that. They're being oppressed. They're being raided. They're not being protected. It just happens over and over and over again. And while this was happening, they were appointed judges to rule over them. Now, it's not judge in the way that we would think about, like with the black robe and you show up to court and all that kind of stuff like that. No, this just meant leaders. So they would lead, they would bring them back to the Lord, the people would be happy maybe for a generation or two, and then immediately they would just forget about it and kind of slip right back into adultery and things like that. It's just sad, you know? So at the beginning here, you know, Samson's father, his name is Manoah, and his wife, they're visited by an angel. Now, what's interesting is, you know, when you see angels in the other parts of the Bible, you know, people's reaction to them are fear, right? And if you've ever seen what a biblically accurate angel, like if you just kind of Google biblically accurate angel and saw a picture of it, it's pretty terrifying. There's wings and eyes and everything else like that all over the place. Like, you'll look at this thing and you'll be like, I'm not going to lie, if I saw that too, I'd be absolutely terrified. So a lot of the times in the Bible, you see that their reaction is terror. But with this instance and several other instances where it says that an angel of the Lord visited and that he looked like a man, John MacArthur actually said that he believes that these are also Christophanies, meaning that this is Jesus actually coming down and being kind of like with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where they're actually, he's coming down and he's visiting. Because again, there's no fear. They're not afraid. It just looks like a man, just any other man. But he's given them the word. This is from the Lord. So again, John MacArthur, he believes that this is a Christophany. I believe that too. I actually think that that's, you know, and it definitely lends itself to the fact that they weren't in immediate terror, you know. He explains to Manoah's wife, hey, you're going to have a very special son. And he needs to make sure that he follows a Nazarite vow for his whole life. right? Nazarite vow has three basic tenets. No drinking alcohol. You know, you're not really even supposed to be going near grapes. No getting anywhere near dead things, even family members, and to never cut your hair. These three, and they could take Nazarite vows. So, like, I suppose we could still do that to this day. If you really just wanted to take a Nazarite vow, and normally it'd be 30, 60, 90 days, and at the end of the vow, when you got all the way through it, they normally would have a celebration. You know? And so, you know, the angel is explaining that he needs to keep this vow his whole life because he's very special. He's going to deliver them from the Philistines. Unfortunately, Samson doesn't really listen. Samson kind of does whatever Samson wants. And what happens is, you know, Manoah, he prays to God and he tells him, you know, he says to the Lord, "Lord, will you send that angel back down here because I'm kind of unclear on the instructions," or whatever it is. I don't really know why, but I guess maybe he just didn't believe his wife. I don't know. So, you know, the Lord is merciful. I mean, he's merciful. He sends the angel back down and they have another meeting. And the angel very clearly spells it out. The Manoah tries to be like, "Hey, stay here. Stay with us. Let's have a meal and celebrate and stuff like that." You know, and the angel tells him, "No, you're trying to hold me, detain me here. I'm not going to stick around. But what I'll do is sacrifice that, you know, that sacrifice to the Lord." And something incredible happens, because as soon as they sacrifice it, he ascends up to heaven. He's gone. And that's how Manoah is like, "Okay, this is very real." Because again, he just looks like a man. He doesn't look like an angel. So after that happens, you know, and you could imagine that being that Manoah's wife was barren, she was not able to have kids. Having the kid, you know, having Samson, knowing that he's going to be special, it seems like, you know, that they really, really kind of like babied him and really like made sure that they spoiled him and they never told him no and they didn't discipline him or anything else like that. You know, because simply put, how do you discipline a child like that, right? If you know that they're destined for greatness because an angel told you, and because you were not able to have children, you're going to, I absolutely positively would. I give that child whatever they want. And it kind of shows later on, you know, because especially kind of the way that he deals with his parents, you know. So Samson, you know, he's older now, and he ends up seeing a Philistine woman, and he goes down to his parents and he says, "I like her, go get her for me." Right? Just go get, she pleases me, go get her for me. Of course, his mother's like, "Well, you know, I mean, they're literally in captivity. They're being oppressed by the Philistines. This is not a good idea." And it kind of brings me to today, where we are warned to make sure that whoever it is that you marry, whoever it is that you decide to be with, whoever it is that you have in your life, you need to make sure that they're Christian and that they really actually love the Lord. And you'll see, nothing, even today, so if you think about what I said, right, you're not going to make them better. You can't make somebody better. That's not possible. But they can make you worse, because that's your nature. That's our nature. As sinners, that's our nature. We can't bring people up, but people can bring us down. And there's so many examples in the Bible of that. "Well, it's okay. I'll just go and date him, or I'll just go date her, and I'll convert them over, and they'll start coming to church," and this. No. Now, minister to them, tell them about it, try to bring them in, but don't date to convert. So that's always, it's going to lead to bad consequences for you, because they're going to affect you. You're not going to affect them, because your very nature is sin. So, you know, they go down there with the parents. He is attacked on the road by a lion, which, you know, is, I'm sure, is common during those days. But today, the lion, I wouldn't want to be that lion. Because it says right there that he literally grabs it like a baby lamb and just rips it in half. What an incredible feat of strength. But he could only do that because the Spirit of the Lord had come upon him. So he rips this lion in half. And, you know, again, where was he close to when this happened? A vineyard. Okay, so we already see him starting to flirt with breaking the rules. We're already starting to see that he doesn't have much concern for the rules. I mean, if you're taking a Nazarite vow, you should not even be near a vineyard. But there he is anyway, right? Well, time goes on, and they procure the marriage and everything else like that. They go down there, and so when the Philistines got married, of course, because it's not the Jewish wedding, it's not an Israelite wedding, they're doing a Philistine wedding, which is very clearly, this is being affected the wrong way. We're doing this the wrong way already. And for Philistines, when they got married, it was 7-day drunken brawl. That's what it was. 7 days of drinking and fighting and debauchery and whatever else it is, right? And they assign, I'm going to say that they probably assigned him 30 guards. They knew who he was. They knew what he was capable of. So during that time, Pastor MacArthur said that he believes that, you know, because he doesn't say exactly in the word, but he believes that Samson was down there drinking. So he's down there drinking and partying it up and whooping it up and doing all that kind of stuff like that. And then what happens? He makes a wager to those men that are with him, to these 30 men, these 30 Philistines. If I'm going to pose you a riddle. Now, again, this is an unfair riddle. Nobody's going to know the answer to this riddle but Samson, because he was the only one that was there when it happened. I mean, to think about it, even when he came back and he saw the lion, he scooped the honey out. Like, literally, could you imagine if there's a beehive inside of a dead lion carcass and you see it and you're just like, you know what? That looks delicious. And you just scoop that honey out and just eat it. Again, getting right next to a dead thing. Literally getting right next to it. Ah, I didn't touch it though. I touched the honey. I didn't touch it. So again, you see him. He's flirting with the rules. And he gives it to his parents. Wouldn't that be a nice gift, right? Hey, where'd you get this from? Don't worry about it. Just eat it. No. You know? So he poses them a question, a riddle about what happened there in the vineyard. Again, there's no way that they could possibly know it. And the riddle went like this. Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. The wager was for 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes, right? 30 linen, that's a lot. And those are nice, you know, for back then, linen garments, changes of clothes, that was expensive stuff. Those were probably the softest thing that they had to wear. And there's no way Samson is going to be able to do that. But again, he's doing this giant wager. I mean, it's you know, when people drink, they start to get like a big head. I'm the greatest person to walk the face of the earth. So it lends credibility to that's what he was doing, because again, at this point now, he's no longer flirting with the rules. He's just flat out breaking them. So for the first 3 days, they can't figure it out. They don't have a clue. They have no idea. And how could they? Nobody was there but Samson. This is an unfair riddle. So the Philistines go to his soon-to-be wife, and they say, if you don't tell us the answer to this riddle, we are going to burn you, your father, and his house all together. Y'all are all going to die by fire. So of course, this she gets, I mean, you would get like completely out of control, and she just starts asking him over and over again, over and over again, just begging, pleading with him. And finally, on the last day before sundown, he tells her, and they come up to him and they say, "We got the answer to the riddle." They give him the right answer, and then he insults his soon-to-be wife, just completely insults her, and storms off. Now, he doesn't just storm off like, okay, I'm going to walk down the street, do this, do that, whatever. No, he storms off about 25 miles to the next town. Let me make sure I get the correct town here. Ashkelon, pardon me. So he marches down to Ashkelon, which again, it's about 25. Could you imagine being that angry? Going on a 25-mile walk, just steaming mad, just to go down there, kill 30 people, 30 Philistines, just boom, take all their clothes, just pick them all up, march them another 25 miles to settle this bet that you've lost. That's a lot of anger. And it'll kind of show you what anger can do to you. It'll eat you up. So, you know, after a cooling off period, Samson, he takes, you know, a goat, a peace offering. He goes back down to the Philistines and he's like, hey, to his prospective father-in-law, and he says, hey, maybe I overreacted a little bit. I'm going to go into your daughter's room. Here's a goat. And they tell, and you know, of course, the Philistine father is like, okay, so here's the thing. I really thought that you hated her. I thought that you, you know, would want nothing to do with her after the fact that she kind of betrayed you. So I might have married her off to one of those guys that was hanging around you. What does Samson do? Instead of, because again, at this point, okay, she's already married, right? Like, okay, just kind of let it go now. Nope, not Samson. That anger, that hatred, whatever you want to call it, is just eating away at him. And now, well, I'm not responsible for what I'm about to do. So what does he do? I got to give him some credit for originality here, because he gets 300 foxes. Can you imagine running around collecting 300 foxes? Just getting a hold of them and then tying their tails together? And then you got to hold all of them, make sure they're not running away already while you're tying their tails together. You're going to be plenty pissed off. You're probably going to get bit a lot. But he didn't care. The anger blinded him. He took those pairs of foxes and he set their tails on fire and he sent them right towards the Philistines' crops, their vineyards. These are, you know, olive groves. These are things that you need to sustain life. And it's all burned down. And of course the Philistines, who did this? Well, they explain the story to them, and what happens? The father and the prospective wife are both burned alive. So the thing that she was attempting to not happen, because of course they can't blame Samson, well, why might as well strike out at somebody who can? I gotta get my revenge somehow. And what do they do? They burn them alive. The same thing that she was trying to avoid is the same thing that ultimately happened. So what does Samson do when he finds out? Well, he flies into a fury. He gets mad. And he ends up killing those men. And the Philistines they've had enough of this. So they gather a large force and they head down to the Jewish settlement. And they're like, listen, get Samson. Bring him here right now, because we're going to do to him what he's done to us. So they go and they get him. And they send a thousand, I mean, because obviously I'd be afraid of that guy too. I'm not going to mess with a guy that's capable of tying up 300 foxtails and sending them on fire down. No, I'm not messing with that guy. And even their own people are like, we're not going. Get everybody. So 1,000 Jewish men go down to him and they're like, Samson, the Philistines are here for you. You know they're here for you. You know why they're here for you. You need to come with us. And all Samson says is, okay, I'll go with you, but you need to promise that you're not going to hurt me, you're not going to kill me. And if you can tell me that, then yeah, go ahead, tie me up. So they tie him up, they bring him to the Philistines. And now this is simply an incredible act that only was, you know, possible through the Lord. Because again, it says that the Spirit will come upon him. So he gets down there, and they're like, oh yeah, it's time to pay the piper. No. The ropes that were binding him just absolutely get obliterated. Now, I find it super interesting. You could imagine that all these Philistines probably had weapons with them. Clubs, swords, whatever it is. But what does Samson choose to pick up? The jawbone of a donkey. Once again, forget about the fact that the Lord is helping you. Forget about the fact that he's empowering you. Instead of grabbing any weapon available, he searches, finds this jawbone, and proceeds to kill 1,000 men. That's right. With the jawbone of a donkey, that's right. He kills 1,000 men. Just bash them. Isn't that wild? So after he's done, you know, he kind of sings a little song. You know, he's with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have slain 1,000 men. Then he named the place where that happens Ramath Lehi, or Jawbone Hill. So at that point, he experiences a thirst that, you know, because, you know, I don't know about you, I think even after about 3 minutes exercise, I need some water. He just killed 1,000 men, so, you know, multiply that by 1,000. And he experiences a thirst that, you know, I could imagine that he sweats so much, he's very nearly on death's door. And of course, he cries out to the Lord. You know, he says, you've given, you know, this great deliverance by the hand of your servant. And now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? Again, even the way he's talking to the Lord is a little unappreciative. It kind of really shows his attitude even towards the Lord. You know, but of course the Lord is merciful and he's gracious, and he actually splits a rock open and he just drinks until his spirit is renewed and he's back. So 20 years from that point passed, and he's judged Israel. I assume he's probably done a pretty good job, because you'll notice that with the other judges, when they did a bad job, they were not in power for long. They'd have 4 years, 5 years, sometimes 7 years, but that was it. They really rarely got to the 10-year period if they weren't following the Lord like they were supposed to. So here, he's got his 20 years. And this is, again, where this is the big downfall, right? This is the story that everybody knows. He finally, you know, they find him. He's in Gaza. He's visiting a lady of the evening. And, you know, all the Philistines in Gaza are like, hey, he's here. In the morning, he's a dead man. So Samson waits till midnight. He picks up the actual, if you could just imagine picking up the gate of a city, right? Like just picking the whole thing up. That's thousands and thousands of pounds. You know, this huge doorway with these massive, you know, column that's going to come down, bam, to secure it in place. And he just picks it up. But not only does he pick it up, he proceeds to march it 27 miles. 27 miles with thousands and thousands of pounds of gate. That's incredible.
That's 2,000.
It could be very well over 2,000. Yes. Right? That's you want to talk about a show of strength. I can't think of one, not even these strong men out here picking up these giant boulders. That's nothing in comparison to doing something like that. So finally, he finds another Philistine woman. Again, here it is again, right? Something that I always say is, you know, you've got to be careful who you pick. First things first, your most important thing is to turn your life over to Jesus. And then the second thing is, be very, very careful with who you decide to be in a relationship with. If they're not Christian, you really should reconsider. And it shows, we're gonna see what happens here. And it's really sad. He falls in love with a woman named Delilah, and we're talking about like a very deep love, right? And when the Philistines realize, hey, this guy is really smitten over her. And I mean, we're talking about he'll ignore all. I mean, if and I know several of us, have seen other people in life where they will ignore every bad quality, every red flag, everything that they know is wrong, everything that they see. It's like, I'm not, it doesn't matter, because either they're going to change or they just won't do that to me, or they, whatever it is that they think. And this is exactly what happens. So the Philistines get a hold of Delilah. Delilah is not, she's not an honest person. But she's beautiful, and that's all he cares about. So he's going to ignore all of the red flags that are fixing to pop up. They offer her a massive price. In those days, 10 shekels of silver was a yearly wage. For the whole year, you made 10 shekels of silver. They offered her 1,100 shekels of silver if she could figure out how to strip him of his strength. That's 110 years of wages. You want to talk about a nice bounty. This is something that will set her up for the rest of her life. For all the way going down. That's a lot. So finally, she says, she tells, please tell me, where your great strength lies, and what may be bound to afflict you. How do we get rid of this strength? How do we get rid of it? Right? This should have automatically been like, why are you asking? Why are you asking me that? Especially considering the fact that she's a Philistine, but it's just not, no click, it doesn't click. So he's just messing with her. And he tells her, if they bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings, not yet dried, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. So the Philistines did that. They brought those bowstrings down there. He's taking a nap or whatever it is that he's doing. They bind him up with the bowstrings. She binds him up with the bowstrings. And of course, she yells, Samson, the Philistines are here. They're coming to get you. And he snaps him. And he deals with the situation. No big deal. Nothing. Right? So what happens? It's funny because we like to use the term like gaslighting nowadays. You know what I mean? And this is exactly what's happening here, right? She's going, look, you've mocked me. You've told me lies. Like, because you're trying to figure out how to literally have this man murdered. But now it's like, but you lied to me. You're bad. So again, he messes with her. Well, if they bind me securely with new ropes that have never been used, then I'll become weak, and like any other man. So they go through the whole rigmarole. They do it again. He busts out. She again, she's the one now that is infuriated and enraged and feels betrayed. You've mocked me. You've told me lies. They do it one more time. He tells her, you know, if you weave the seven locks of my head into the web of a loom, then I'll lose all my strength. Can you imagine that, being asleep and somebody's just sitting there, because he's got seven locks on his head and they're just sitting there weaving his hair together, right? And then you're just not going to wake up. Like, hey, I wonder what's going on here. Again, when you're in that situation, even when you're with somebody who you know you're not supposed to be with, you will ignore and pretend that these things don't exist. And you will just continue to just let those red flags fly until they can't fly no more. So finally, it says here, she really pulls out the big guns. You know, she says, you know, how can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You've mocked me three times and have not told me where your great strength lies. And it came to pass, so it says right here, this is verse 16. And it came to pass that she pestered him daily with her words and pressed him so that his soul was vexed to death. That he told her all his heart and said to her, no razor has ever come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If I am shaven, then my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. So, for the, you know, if you could just imagine at that moment, she's like, I did it. I got him. What does she do? She gets a hold of the Philistines. She makes him fall asleep. Hey, just come here. Just take a nice little snooze on my lap. And what do? They shave his hair. And I got to tell you that for me, one of the verses that really touched me the most was, you know, that, you know, she starts to torment him. And she tells him again, hey, oh, the Philistines are here. The Philistines are here. And he gets up. I'll go out as before at other times and shake myself free. And this is the part right here. But he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. That gives me goosebumps. He took all of what the Lord did for him for granted. He broke all the rules that he ever wanted to. He did everything wrong that he could possibly do. Because he had always counted on the Lord to bail him out. Well, unfortunately, once that hair was cut, the Nazarite vow was, I mean, that was basically, if you think about it, he had broken the first two over and over and over again. So if you can imagine, okay, here's number three. You're out. You've drank alcohol, touched dead things. You've done these two things over and over and over again. But finally, when that hair was cut, that was the last straw. And again, to me, that chills me. So, right then and there, you know, of course, the Philistines being the Philistines, they tore his eyes out. Both his eyeballs, gone, obliterated, finished. And then they put him into prison, and they basically made him into a hamster. He was on a grinder all day long, just grinding away, you know, wheat, whatever it is. He was just pushing a giant wheel around all day, maybe all night, who knows? Who knows what he went through when he was there in being captive by the Philistines? Because again, we know the Philistines were brutal people. So finally, after, you know, enough time goes by, the Philistines are like, they start giving credit to their victory over Samson to Dagon, the fish god. Right? Dagon has made us, that we have taken down We've taken down Samson. The greatest threat from the Israelites is now in our captivity, and he is being used for entertainment purposes. So finally, they're all sitting there. They're having their revelry, probably having drinks, all kinds of stuff like that. And they're like, you know what? Let's get him out here. Let's get him to entertain us. So he comes out, you know, and again, you just imagine them mocking, laughing. This is the guy? And all he says to one of the servants, he says, just do me a favor, if you will. Chain me up to these two pillars in the center so that at least I know where I am. Now we see that he was extremely strong, and finally he was brought low. He was humbled. He was weak. And when he realized it, what does he do? He cries out to the Lord one last time. But again, he doesn't cry out to the Lord to apologize or anything else like that. He wants revenge for his eyes. That's it. You know, instead of, I mean, I could just imagine if you know, you were on that grind wheel, you might be praying the entire time, Lord, I'm so sorry. I should have listened. I did not listen all these times. I'm sorry. But only when the idea of revenge showed up, revenge for his eyes, did he finally cry out to the Lord. And the Lord answered. He was able to push both those pillars down, and it says that he killed more people in that very instant, had to be over 3,000, than he had the entire time that he had been against the Philistines. They say it's got to be over 3,000 people were crushed to death right then and there. A lot of times, something that you're going to hear when you go out in the world is, well, the Bible's old. The Bible doesn't apply. It's, what is it, thousands of years old? And then something else that you'll hear from like a lot of like liberal theologians is, well, you got to worry about the context. What was happening at the time? The Bible is as applicable today as it will be tomorrow, as it has been the entire time. We have not evolved past the Word, and we have so many warnings. If we would just listen, if we would be doers and not just hearers, if we would take these lessons and we would apply them in our lives, I think we'd all be able to walk a little closer with the Lord until finally he takes us home. And that's that. Thank y'all.